and good evening. You're listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Of course, you can pick us up at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. Don't forget, that's the new domain. It's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can pick up podcasts of past shows, my daily commentary, and all that other stuff. Of course, we're on satellite virtual channel W3957. We're on kickradio.com, and starting this evening, Access Communications Channel 7. Yes, the show is on TV. Can you figure that? We're going to give Howard Stern a run for his money. Tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show, we're going to focus on some missing person stories that you've seen on America's Most Wanted and that I've carried here on the program and give you some updates. Mike Melson will be here to discuss the search for missing person Anita Mayo. Texas EquiSearch and those guys will be out searching for her very soon. Drew Kessie will be here to talk about his daughter. Jennifer Kessie has been missing for some time now. And we've had a lot of weird reports that have come out of the internet. Strange things where Jennifer's picture has shown up on some dating sites. There's some sick, twisted SOBs out there that have been playing games. So Drew will be on the show to talk about that. And then my old friend Stephanie Good, attorney, New York Times bestselling author of the new books Exposed and Rush to Injustice, will be here to talk about the search for internet predators and some of the problems that NBC Dateline has been having in those lawsuits. So Stephanie Good, who has gone undercover to catch some of those internet predators, will be here. That's tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. It's always nice to have you, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Anita Mayo has been missing since August 8th, 2005, when she had breakfast with a friend before leaving Hawthorne, Nevada for a day trip over to the Sonora Pass. She has not been seen since. We've covered this story here on Scared Monkeys Radio before. America's Most Wanted have covered it. And we're working on and talking about Texas EquiSearch getting involved for a search for Nita. Tonight I have Mike Melson and Nita's daughter, Tracy Mayo, on the line with me to talk about what's been going on. Hi, guys.
Hello. Good evening, Dana.
Hi, Mike. Tracy, are you there?
I sure am. Hello.
Now, this is obviously difficult for the both of you, Tracy in particular. It's nice to see that Texas EquiSearch is going to be involved. I don't think you can find a better organization than them to come out and help with the search. America's Most Wanted have covered the story. If you could, Tracy, could you just remind my listeners about your mom and the story of her being missing?
Absolutely. Like you said, April 8th of 2005, she was just going to go on a day trip up to the mountains. She went up there, and I believe her intent was to go up there to take a look at the scenery because it is a very beautiful place, the Sonora Pass, Highway 108 in the Sierra Mountains. Very beautiful. I believe that the area she stopped at, which is the Donnell Vista area, it's an overlook, and it's got this real beautiful scenery. I believe she went there to take pictures, to have a lunch, and just to spend the day relaxing and enjoying nature. That's what she did. That's what she loved to do.
Now, your mom's car was found in the parking lot. It had her purse, cell phone, keys, and everything in it. Tell us a little bit about that and the investigation.
Her purse, her keys, her cell phone, all of that was found in the car. Her keys being in the car was not too big of a deal to us, just for the simple fact that the car had one of those keypads on the outside, and she did use that to get into her car. So that's not an indication that, you know, somebody grabbed her and her keys were left in there right at that time. I believe the things that were missing were her camera and her, we know she had her prescription sunglasses with her because without them she couldn't see. So we just really believe that she probably got out, and that was one of the only places along that stretch of highway that had really good facilities. The bathrooms were good there. So I believe she stopped to look at the scenery. I believe she stopped to look at the bathroom and have a picnic. She had a picnic packed in her car. But from that point on, you know, we just really don't know. They found her car there. They pulled it off the mountain. And then they brought in search and rescue and about 11 different dog teams, and the dogs never even picked up a scent. And they searched that Vista area for 2 days, and they're just not finding, they didn't find anything, and so they pulled their people off of it.
Mike, Texas Equisearch is going to be involved in this here very shortly. Tell us a little bit about your contact with them.
Sure. I work with Texas Equisearch on a number of searches, and in fact, it was at a search 2 years ago for Nita that I met Tim Miller, and since then, I've just continued to stay involved in looking for Tracy, both with Texas Equisearch and on my own. I head up there a few times a year just by myself to look around for Nita as well.
Let's talk about the difficulty of a search in that terrain. Tracy said that several dog teams have been in, but there's more to searching than just dogs, correct?
That's correct, Dan. As you know, dogs are absolutely wonderful tool to use in searching, but a negative result by the dogs doesn't necessarily mean that there's nothing to be found there. And that's the premise of this search this coming weekend is, after reviewing things and doing a little more research into dogs and how they were used, it may be possible that the search moved away from the vista a little too quickly. So we're going to go back and revisit that area a little more thoroughly this time.
Now we're talking August 8th, 2005, August 11th, 2007, 2 years. But there's always that possibility that evidence is still there.
Absolutely. We know her camera is missing. We know her sunglasses are missing. Finding either of those two items would be hugely beneficial in at least knowing where she was. So items like that, clothing, just anything at this point, there still can be a lot of things there. As you know, people are found all the time or their whereabouts after several years of being missing.
Absolutely, and we all hope and pray that you'll be successful in the search. Tracy, have there been any leads, and what kind of cooperation have you had with law enforcement? Is there still an active investigation into your mom's disappearance?
You know, I think there was in the beginning. I do feel like things have really slowed down over the past year. I personally have a meeting with there's a new investigator on the case. I personally have a meeting with him on Thursday, and I think I could be able to answer that question a little bit better. But there are definitely some issues I'm going to push and some leads I'm going to push that I need more answers to, and I need to know exactly what they've done towards some of those things. And so I think, you know, yes, we are doing the search on the 18th and 19th, and yes, I think it's very vital revisiting the vista, and that is just in my gut feeling that that's where we need to go back and recheck, because just in talking with Mike and some other experienced searchers and also family members that have lost, you know, that have had missing family members, that statistically there are recoveries found in areas that have been searched and searched, you know, and even just something like Mike said is a camera or something. But not only am I here for that, but it's really going to be visiting with the investigators, pushing them, seeing what they have, what else they're going to do, what else are they willing to do, or are they really pulling themselves back from this case? And if that's the case, then we're going to have to move with some different avenues, whether that be private investigators or what. I'm just not real sure yet.
Now, America's Most Wanted have covered this case, have they not?
Yes, they have. I've really spent quite a bit of time with America's Most Wanted. They say they're not done with the case, that they will do some updates with her. And actually, they aired her segment last June of 2006. But just 2 months ago, they built in her story with Tim Miller with Texas Equisearch,
right,
as featuring her as one of the types of searches that he does. So they did update, you know, give her an update on their show as well this year, too. So,
well, one thing about America's Most Wanted, my work that I've done with them here on the program, is they never end a case until the case is ended, and they have answers for it, and they're a class organization all the way. Mike, let's talk about Texas Equisearch and Tim Miller, another class guy, a guy who is a victim himself. He lost his daughter who was murdered many years back. What's it like working with him?
What's it like working with Tim?
Yeah.
You know, I think extremely highly of Tim, and I enjoy working with him. When he comes out to California on any case, he usually gives me a call. He recently gave me a call regarding Donna Jo's case down in Southern Cal, and I've been anxious to get busy on that one as well. I just really respect the fact that Tim's out there making a difference. He's doing something. You know, a lot of people sit at home and talk about what should be done, but Tim's out there doing it.
Absolutely, he does. Let's talk about the cooperation between law enforcement and an organization like Texas Equisearch. I featured the Donna Jo case here a couple of weeks back and the problems that they're having with the LAPD in particular. Are you foreseeing any sorts of problems in the search for Nita and law enforcement?
No, not at all. The relationship with law enforcement in these cases can run the gamut from one extreme where they prohibit you from coming in, such as down in Southern California right now, to others where they welcome them. In this case, the old detective and the new detective, I've been had a good relationship with both of them. The new detective is extremely supportive of this new search, has contacted me a few times related to it, making sure that we have what we need and making sure that he gets what he needs out of it. So they've been absolutely fantastic in that regard.
Tracy, one thing that we don't hear about a lot when we cover missing person cases, whether it's cable news or radio or internet or whatever, is about the person. Tell us about your mom.
Well, my mother was, you know, her going over to the past, to go look at the Donnell Vista by herself was definitely something that she would do that was not out of the norm. She enjoyed nature. She loved to take trips like that by herself. Now that she was a very good friend, she was a very family-oriented person. She loved her family very dearly, and her family loved her. So this, to me, this my thoughts on this is there's absolutely no way that she would willingly put any one of us in this position that we've been in the past 2 years. So that's where I know that either something really, well, not either, but something really terrible happened to her that day. And that's what we've got to find out.
Tracy, have there been any leads, any information that has come in this period of time over the past 2 years?
You know, when America's Most Wanted aired, there was a couple of dozen leads that came in, and from what I heard from the investigators is that a couple of them were collaborating with each other. They were backing each other up, but then they didn't go anywhere. And then at one point they had a person of interest that didn't go anywhere. If there is some leads, they're not sharing that with me. But again, those will be the issues that I'm going to... I mean, it's 2 years. I was pretty patient with if they did have information. You know, I understood the fact that they couldn't share them, but now it's 2 years, and it doesn't seem like they have many leads to go on. Now I want to know now exactly what they do have, and so that's going to be my meeting on Thursday.
Mike, organizing the search that's coming up, are you looking for volunteers, or what can we do out here to help?
Absolutely, Dana. This will be a ground search. It's light hiking at about 7,000 foot elevation, and we need all the people who can do light hiking up in the mountains like that we can get. So just getting the word out and requesting for volunteers is a big help.
And how can people get a hold of you if they're in the area and able to help?
They can give me a call. My phone number is area code 925-600-8084, extension 5. And they can also go to scaredmonkeys.com, and there's a request for help on there with my contact information as well.
Absolutely. Tracy, just before I let you go, we've got about 4 minutes left here in the interview. It's so difficult when I speak to family members that have missing loved ones that haven't been able to get the answers, and you want to do what you can to help. How can we in the news media or the public help families like yourselves to get answers, the answers that you deserve? Because I sense a little bit in your voice that you're a little disappointed in the investigation. You say, you know, it's 2 years, and you're right, 2 years is 2 years too long. Sometimes cases go on for 20 years and there are no answers. What can we do more to help?
But, you know, the 2 years may not seem like a long time, But it has been 2 years since I've seen my mother.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't mean for there to be a bad feeling towards, or if that's coming across towards investigation. My bad feeling is not knowing where my mother is one of the worst feelings that there can be. And living with that on a daily basis, but living in North Dakota versus, you know, she went missing out here, that's what's the most frustrating thing. The thing that I think could help is it's a resort area where she went, where her car was found and where she went missing. My gut instinct is telling me that somewhere across this country is somebody that saw something that day, but they just don't know they saw it because they haven't heard of this. And so that's always been my push, and that's why I really appreciate, you know, you doing this interview. I appreciated the America's Most Wanted. It's venues like that that I just really appreciate, because I just think getting this word out there, we're going to grab that person that actually did see somebody.
And anyone with information on the disappearance of your mom, Nita Mayo, how can they pass that on?
Well, they can give me a call. They can call the Tuolumne County Sheriff's Department, which I have to tell you, I don't have that number right offhand. They could call the Tuolumne County Sheriff's Department. They could call Mike Nelson, the number that he just gave you, and he can pass that on.
And, of course, they can call America's Most Wanted, which is 1-800-CRIME-TV. That's 1-800-CRIME-TV. Or go on to the Scared Monkeys webpage at scaredmonkeys.com and drop me an email, dana@scaredmonkeys.com, and we can always pass that information along. Mike Nelson, Tracy Mayo, good luck with the search, and let's stay in touch.
Thank you so
Dana.
Much.
Appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back. Jennifer Kesey has been missing since January 24, 2006 at Orlando, Florida. At the time, she was 24 years of age, 5'8" in height, shoulder length, sandy blonde hair, green eyes, 125 pounds. Her vehicle, a 2004 black four-door Chevy Malibu, was found at Texas and Americana in Orlando, Florida. There is a reward offered for information on the return of Jennifer Kesey. And again, go to their webpage at www.findjenniferkesey.com, or you can call a lawyer or 407-722-2162. That's the family tip line or crime line in the Orlando area at 1-800-423-TIPS. There's been some information on Jennifer's case in the media, some negative and some positive lately, and I thought I'd bring Jennifer's dad back to the program to talk about it. Drew Kesey, welcome back to the program.
Good evening, Dana. Thank you very much.
You know, I'm going to touch on this just briefly, because I think in this period of time from the 24th of January till now, you've probably ran into a few roadblocks that have been difficult for you, and one of them is this sick, twisted SOB out there that put Jennifer's picture on some dating websites. Your comments about that?
Well, you know, first and foremost, it's exploiting Jennifer, something we did not want to happen, obviously. We put her picture out there in good faith in trying to find her. It's fraudulent. It's you know, I don't know. We don't want another victim, that's for sure, and obviously at least two people, maybe one and the same, were trying to get dates under false pretenses, and that's just totally fraudulent and appalling, really. Yeah,
appalling, incredibly cruel, illegal, you name it, we can cover the gamut, but the goal here, Drew, is with you, Joyce, your family, and with me, I've told you this many times, is to find Jennifer. Let's talk about the case, and then I want to talk a little bit about the playing cards, which I thought was a fantastic idea that we've seen. Where has the case been going? What have you heard lately?
The case, and boy, you know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but the case is really extremely active. We are getting multiple calls a day from all the tip lines. Our particular family tip line that you mentioned has really been ringing a lot.
Good.
The authorities have been doing searches on a regular basis, and, you know, with great hope, they have not come up with anything yet. And that's really is giving us hope that she is still out there, that someone does have her, and she needs to be found, and found as soon as possible, period.
This is just a disappearance, like a vanishing almost, where besides the video of the suspect, there's very little evidence, correct?
Absolutely. Nothing has been found or used of Jennifer's since the last day that anyone had spoken to her, which was basically January 23rd, the evening of. And, you know, as you mentioned, we're not only looking for Jennifer, we're looking for a suspect now, and both have vanished. And that is just mind-boggling to us.
There was an initiative we've seen a few weeks back here on some of the cable news channels that I thought was fantastic that had to do with missing persons, playing cards, and correctional services. Let's talk about that.
Yes. The state of Florida, through the Attorney General's office and the Crime Stoppers of the state, they got grant money. And they took 104 cold cases as well as missing persons cases and made 100,000 decks out of them. So basically, there's a wide range of opportunities for cold cases as well as missing people to be found. The prison population definitely knows what's going on. They're not there for any, you know, reason other than knowing what's going on the streets. And they don't lose contact. They do know what is going on still out in the streets as well as on the inside. And we have 129 state prisons in Florida, and there are 95,000, I think, state prisoners in Florida. And 85,000 decks went out to those state prisons 2 weeks ago. And the next 15,000 lucky people to visit our state prisons will receive a deck as they go in. And I think it's just a great way of getting, you know, faces and information back out. There are people in the jail system that don't like each other, that could get out with information. I mean, a whole host of things. And it has been used successfully in the past, and I think it will be this time, too.
Yeah, it's one of the few things in Iraq that actually worked,
yes.
The deck of cards to catch Saddam and his henchmen. And I think this is a fantastic idea to try and solve some cold cases with those that may be directly involved. It was an initiative that was thought of by who?
Well, actually, we had done it personally about, I guess, maybe eight months ago.
Right.
And we did them only with Jennifer's, and we put them into the county jail. Now, I do know it's a county very close to Orange County, Polk County. They had used them previously with success also. But I do believe it started with Iraq, the war, with the 52 cards of the most wanted people. And it just transferred over really conveniently and is working.
I'm focusing on several missing cases tonight, Drew, and again, it's difficult when you have a guest on a program like this, like yourself. You and I have talked many, many times, to ask the right question. And I will ask you tonight, and I know both you and your wife have been here before, and I could ask you the Pat, how are you doing question. Well, that should be a simple answer. But I'm going to ask you how we are doing, how the media is doing with cases like yours and others. Are we doing enough to help you?
In Jennifer's particular case, personally, I don't think Joyce, Logan, we could ask for more from the media. We have been, no one has been unkind to us. Everyone has accepted what we're trying to do for Jennifer in such a way that you folks really go out of your way to help us. And it is, we're unbelievably humbled by your media, who wants to help Jennifer, our daughter, who, you know, was taken from us and is out there somewhere. I don't know, it's beyond belief, but to answer your question, we cannot ask for more out of the media. It's been just an unbelievable experience in that. And as you probably know, it could be very different.
Yes.
But we thank each and every one of you. Every time we have the opportunity and you have the opportunity to speak about Jennifer, it does work. It really does work, and it makes the phones ring, and it's unbelievable that we've had the opportunity to keep them ringing for a year and a half, and that's in part from you and from media and people that just listen, look, and keep it on their minds. We thank you so much.
Drew, just before I let you go, I'm looking at a picture of a beautiful young lady whose future and our future, because of what she could do and still could do for us, has been taken. If you had 30 seconds, which about what you have, to pass on a message to the person that either took Jennifer or to Jennifer herself, what would that be?
I would just honestly ask them to realize that it is our daughter. It is a person that we love and miss, and we're just desperate. We're brokenhearted beyond belief. There is no reason for it. And if by chance she or yourself has harmed someone in some way, we're sorry. She's sorry. Whatever it is. But it's just senseless. It doesn't make sense. She has never hurt anyone in her life. And after a year and a half, the time has come. If you do have her, if she is still with us, just leave her somewhere and go. Just point her in a direction and go. Let's not worry about anything. We simply want our daughter returned. And if, unfortunately, she is not with us, we still need her back. She is our daughter, and we need to take care of her as her family. And we're just at this point looking for closure and hoping for the miracle. And if you can make that happen, anyone out there, oh my gosh, just for one second try and feel what we feel. And just let her go, or lead us in a certain direction so we can have closure and finality for Jennifer. Nobody else, but for Jennifer. And I thank you, Dana.
Absolutely. Drew Kesey, it's www.findjenniferkesey.com, www.findjenniferkesey.com. Thanks again. We'll stay in touch.
Thank you, Dana.
Okay,
have a great evening.
Bye. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be back in just a minute with New York Times bestselling author Stephanie Good. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. Stephanie Good is with me. She's the author of a new book called A Rush to Injustice: How Power, Prejudice, Racism, and Political Correctness Overshadowed Truth, Justice in the Duke LaCrosse Rape Case. Also exposed the harrowing story of a mother's undercover work with the FBI to save children from internet sex predators. Both are available at Amazon and all your favorite book online bookstores and bookstores and all that kind of stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about some of these online sexual predator cases, in particular the Dateline shows. Here's a little story about To Catch a Predator. Dr. Maurice Wolin is a prominent oncologist. The doctor was taken down by cops last year as Dateline cameras rolled. Prosecutors say Dr. Wolin made plans to have a sexual encounter with someone on the internet who he thought was 13 and, in fact, was a self-proclaimed evil vigilante, founder of the Perverted Justice Program. And now there's lawsuits going on. There's another one going on where a prosecutor, I believe in Texas, took his life while the Dateline crew was on his front lawn and the police were coming to arrest him. And I'm going to bring Stephanie on to talk a little bit about this type of work that she has done successfully, have a 100% conviction rate, and what's Dateline doing right or wrong, and is it hurting the effort to catch, because we all can agree to catch these sexual predators online is a good thing. Hi, Steph.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
Good. Welcome back to the program. You've seen, and I've done a couple of shows in the past here about the problems with Dateline. I'm curious to get your comments on what's going on there.
Well, in the very early stages of that show, I thought it was a wonderful way for people to learn about sexual predators and they were getting the word out, and I thought that was a very important thing. But to be perfectly honest with you, the way the show has evolved, and I've said this before, I said it before the lawsuits were brought, I'm not comfortable with the way that the show goes now, the way it's, you know, the way that they catch these predators, what they do. And it really is something that makes me very queasy when I watch it. I can't even watch the show anymore because, you know, in my opinion, the most important thing is not only catching these guys, but putting them away in prison. And
right.
That's the number one issue here. And to me, at this point in time, it just looks like the show is about ratings because, you know, and of course, this is my opinion. I am not speaking for anybody else, but when I see what they do on there with, you know, catching these guys, putting them on camera, and having the police waiting outside, while it seems like a really exciting thing to happen for people to watch, the truth is they're putting these guys in the position of possibly claiming entrapment
right.
because now they're being held against their will. Once they know where they are and who they're facing, they know that there are cops outside. They're being questioned without Miranda warnings, and there are so many issues here, just like, you know, what happened with that guy committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know how anybody's going to react when they're arrested in any given situation, and to put these guys in such a volatile position where they know now everybody in the world is going to know what they're doing, their family's going to find out, you know, so terribly humiliating. You're putting everybody in jeopardy. So there's so many little things going on there. I'm just not comfortable with that show at all anymore.
Initially, you know, and I agree with you completely on what you've just said. Initially, the goal was a valiant one and a good one, but it's become more shock TV or schlock TV, whatever you want to call it, where it's for ratings and follow the money trail to see how many viewers you can get and how many advertisers you can get. I've interviewed attorneys before on this topic, and of course you're an attorney, and you've touched on it briefly, but if we could maybe follow it up a little bit further, Steph, is the Miranda, the part where they are brought in, held in front of a camera, so to speak, knowing very well that as soon as they walk out the door, the final part of the video will happen where they're tackled, arrested at gunpoint, etc., etc. What is entrapment, first of all, the people that are wondering what you're talking about, and a lot of these cases that we're hearing about on Dateline aren't even being proceeded with, and is that why?
Well, first of all, entrapment is really when somebody is being has put in a situation to do something, you know, to perform a criminal act, and they really don't have the, you know, they're not predisposed to it. So let's say, you know, I am luring you to a situation that you may not have really, you know, thought about going to, that, you know, I put ideas into your head, and you might have never done this before, or you may have never done it ever, and I'm putting you in this position and you know, maybe luring you in there. And, you know, the idea is when you see these people from Perverted Justice talking to these guys on the computer, and you see some of the chats there, you know, come on over, bring a six-pack of beer, mm-hmm. you know, bring condoms, whatever the case may be. I'm here alone. Come on. You know, we don't do that. You know, in my experience with the FBI, you don't do that because that could be looked at as entrapment. We just wait. You know, we let the guy do the talking. He comes on to us. He asks us if we'll have sex. He asks us if we'll meet him. We don't ever do it first. And that is because that door, we never leave that door open. The jury will never see anything where we have lured anybody in. And that's the specific reason for that is because there's a very fine line. And, you know, you have to worry about the way jurors are going to look at these cases. And we just don't leave anything, you know, unturned. Everything is covered. We never do anything that could be looked at as entrapment. So, you know, that's the main issue here, is that you see a lot of luring going on. You know, hey, I'm home alone. My parents are away. Come on over. And it just it has a bad flavor to it. And I think that's one of the reasons why prosecutors are not pursuing these cases, is because of that issue, and the whole issue of these guys being questioned also. While they really are being detained, they really cannot leave. They're really technically under arrest, and they haven't been read a Miranda warning, and yet Chris Hansen is questioning them. And these guys are, a lot of them are confessing. And so, you know, there are all these technicalities going on, and the cases are being ruined. So, you know, you could have a good case if you did it the right way, but they're not doing it the right way. And so prosecutors, you know, don't want to waste the money, the people's money, really, by pursuing cases that they're not sure they can win. And a good defense attorney will come along and will get these guys off. And so I think that's why a lot of the prosecutors are now backing away. And even, you know, even when they were prosecuting these cases, most of these guys did not get jail time. Many of them, if any of them did go to jail, prosecutors weren't even recommending long sentences in a lot of the states. You know, 3 months, 18 months maybe, but that, they weren't even getting them. They were just getting probation, a lot of them. So, you know, these cases are very, 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 they're very difficult cases, and that's why you have to go about them in exact, you know, there's an exact science to these cases, and you never know. You don't know what a judge is going to say. You don't know what a prosecutor is even going to say, and you definitely don't know what a jury is going to say. So
yeah, you got to do it the right way, that's for sure.
It has to be done, and that's, the show just is just, you know, it's got so many just gray areas to it.
The whole issue of internet sexual predators and education for the public is out there. One of the things, I guess, that Dateline does, even though they're kind of destroying the concept of catching these guys by blowing all the cases, is educating, I hope, parents to try and protect their kids, or to work harder protecting their kids from these sorts of predators. Your book, the Exposed book, talks just about that. Let's go through that a little bit, about parents and protecting their children from these sorts that are out there.
Well, yeah, for one thing, I think what they're doing, what Dateline is doing and notifying the public about what's going on, is just, it's not even the tip of the iceberg,
right?
Because you're seeing these very little pieces of chats, and that's about it, and you just see these guys showing up. But what Exposed does, it lays it all out from beginning to end. And, you know, I explain from the very first chat how these guys work, how they manipulate children, how they get into children's lives, you know, how they're able to actually get a child to come out and meet them. And it's just so different than Dateline. You have everything right in front of you. I've got transcripts from the trials that I've testified at, because I do go into court and testify against the ones who don't plead guilty. And there are transcripts from the trials, which is important because you get to see how these predators are defending themselves, what they're saying and what their lawyers are saying in the courtroom. And, you know, which I think it's very valuable information. And, you know, you also get to see transcripts from telephone calls, because I also can sound like a 13 or 12 year old girl, and I can, you know, I do call them when they request a phone call, and you see what they say on the phone to the little girls. And there are chats, real, they're all, everything in the book, except for a sample chat that I put towards the end of the book for a specific reason. Everything else is actual, you know, it's real material from real cases that have happened. And I talk to parents, really, in the book, and to kids, about how these guys go about doing it, what they offer the kids, how they convince them to come out. I've been to arrest scenes also. I describe what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Exposed goes so much further than a show like Dateline, because you get all the information. I get a lot of great feedback from parents. They've watched the Dateline series and they had no idea what it really was all about, because it, you know, that really is just the tip of the iceberg.
Have the media, Stephanie, been doing enough to educate? You do it with your book, Exposed. I try to do it here on my program, and I guess you see it a little bit more, but you don't see a whole lot. Maybe America's Most Wanted does a little bit on protecting kids. But this internet and, you know, the typical internet sexual predator may not be the scary-looking guy that's sitting in a basement somewhere that looks like something out of a horror movie. He could be a CEO of a major company.
Oh, absolutely. I think most of the time these guys are not scary looking. They look fairly normal. And, you know, you've got law enforcement people who are also sexual predators. You've got teachers and coaches and bus drivers, pediatricians, CEOs of corporations. You know, we've had music teachers, a manager of an insurance company. There's just no telling, you know, there's no telling. We had a guy who worked for Sesame Street and Nickelodeon.
Jeez. You know, that part is just bizarre. Let's talk about resources. Are law enforcement, FBI, prosecutors, whatever, is there being enough spent on this issue? It's an epidemic, obviously. Are we funding enough and do we have enough people to fight this battle?
No, I really believe that a lot more needs to be done in this area, especially when it comes to the Justice Department. I think that, you know, we were supposed to have an attorney general who was supposed, this was going to be a big issue for him, the, you know, sexual predator issue, and I haven't seen it at all. I haven't seen the Justice Department come forward with what they should be doing and the focus. I don't think the focus is enough on this issue at all.
Your new book, A Rush to Injustice. You can say that three times real fast.
Try that with the subtitle.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And you, we've talked about this before on the program, but let's spend some time with that now. It's How Power, Prejudice, Racism, and Political Correctness Overshadowed Truth, Justice, and Justice in the Duke LaCrosse Rape Case. We haven't heard much about that lately in the media. Of course, DA Mike Nifong had his day. I think there's more coming for him,
yes.
Rightfully
yes.
So.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the book.
Well, you know, it's about the three boys who were accused of raping the African-American stripper last year at a party that the lacrosse team had. You know, everybody came down on these kids because for one of their race, they were white.
Right.
They were seen to be well-to-do kids. They were at a school like Duke, a very prestigious university. They were athletes, and I think that people jumped on a bandwagon and went after them because they, you know, a lot of people like to believe that rich white jocks at good universities are capable of doing anything, and because they think that their parents can get them out of it. But this is just not the case, and it was a shame. It was really a shame what happened to these boys. People didn't do enough investigating before they jumped on that bad bandwagon and went after them. And these kids' lives were, I'd say, temporarily destroyed. I think they're going to be okay. Thankfully, but the prosecutor did a terrible, terrible thing against them, all for his own political gain. And unfortunately, a lot of people went along with him. You know, a lot of faculty members at Duke, the media.
Yeah, I want to get into the media part of it, Stephanie. I called him starstruck, Mike Nifong. While this is going on, he's running for re-election. There's cameras. This case was covered like most cases haven't been, there was a lot of rush to injustice by some commentators about this case too. How much did that fit in? And let's talk a little bit about a code of conduct. As an investigative reporter or someone covering a case like this, how much should you know before you go out and try to say what you know?
You better know. I mean, I don't see investigative reporting very often anymore, on it, honestly. I think, you know, a lot of people are out there just taking a story off the AP wire or hearing it from somebody and just running with it without really doing their investigation. I do believe that most of the journalists who reported this story early on were doing that. And I think that they have a responsibility and to really investigate things before they go on the news with them. You know, just as an example, my brother Larry Garrison got involved in this very early on, and he went and he actually talked to the other stripper and interviewed her quite extensively to try to get the story out of her. You know, this is what people should have done. These journalists just tore these kids to shreds. You know, even before I wrote the book, I was down in Durham. I went down there a few times. I interviewed a lot of people. This was not a rush to judgment on my part. You know, this was a rush to judgment on the school, on NIFONG, on the media. But, you know, I went down and I did my homework. And that's why the book comes out with the truth, because I got it from people who were really involved in the case. And it was very obvious to me while I was working on the issue that these boys did absolutely nothing. You know, and it's really a shame. It really is.
When you conduct an investigation, it's like putting together a puzzle. You have this piece and that piece and this piece. And unless it's all put together and you've got that one extra piece out, that one extra piece could be reasonable doubt. And when you rush into something, and I still think a lot of this had to do with the cameras and NIFONG up for re-election. What's the latest with him? We saw that his disbarment a little bit was carried on some of the cable news channels, but we haven't heard much lately. Is there a chance that there'll be some criminal prosecution against him?
Yeah, there is. I don't know what the date is at this moment in time. I was away for a few weeks when he did make his last court appearance, and I know, or when something happened in court, I don't even know actually if he actually showed up for that himself. But he is facing possible criminal charges, and I know that certain members of the families that were involved are really hoping for that, and he deserves that. He deserves it because his actions were criminal. There's no question about it. He knew the kids were innocent. They, you know, he went through this entire process, and he never interviewed the alleged victim. And that's unheard of. That's absolutely unheard of. You know, my older son is an attorney, and he was a prosecutor for quite a number of years. And he was a special prosecutor. And I spoke to him about this case, and he said to me, you know what? He said, never, never in my career would I ever move forward with charges like that against anybody without interviewing the victim and making sure that she's credible and making sure that her story makes sense. And this man, Mike NIFONG, never sat down with that victim, that alleged victim, and questioned her. And he met with the defense attorneys and refused to look at the alibis. And these were solid alibis. We're not talking about, oh, my friend said I was with him that night. We're talking about a photograph of Reed Seligman at an ATM machine across town at the time that he was, supposed to be involved in this rape scene. And receipts and, you know, from cab drivers and, Colin Finnerty also had receipts and an alibi, and these were solid alibis, and yet NIFONG didn't want to see them. And then when the DNA results came back showing that there was absolutely nothing, not a hair from these kids' heads on this girl who claimed that she was violently raped, you know, gang raped for 30 minutes by three boys with no condoms being used, and not one drop of DNA was found on her from any of these boys, but there was DNA from several other men on her and in her. And Mike NIFONG refused to drop all of the charges.
It's bizarre. It's investigation 101 run amok. We got about 5 minutes left, Steph. Before I let you go, speaking of lack of investigation and 101 run amok, Aruba is another book that you wrote. Here we are all this time later, and still that case is spinning its wheels, and Dave and Beth Holloway are without answers. Your thoughts on all this time later and nothing happening?
It's disgraceful. It's really disgraceful, and they won't stop. You know, none of us will stop until we find out what happened. You know, we're still hoping somebody's going to come forward. They're still on and off, you know, doing searches, and it's just terrible what happened down there. I mean, I personally would never go down there. I know a lot of people would never go down there. You know, and it's not really just about the fact that a girl was missing in Aruba. It's about how they handled the case.
Yep.
You know, when you handle a missing persons case, you take it seriously. And it's so obvious that they just didn't take it seriously. So why would anybody want to go down there, take a chance on any, you know, being a victim of any kind of a crime, knowing that they don't respect Americans down there?
No, and it's a tragedy, and it's a political corruption, it's a lack of investigation, a cover-up. We can sit and say many different descriptions of that whole story. It's just so sad. What's next for you? Do you ever get time to sit down and take a
no.
breath?
No, but I would like to sometime come on your show and talk about Jack McClellan.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, you know, that guy that was stalking children was finally arrested, and
yep.
And one of these days, and when you have time, I'd love to talk about that issue.
Well, let's. We've got a couple of minutes. I happened to be watching KTLA last night live when they broke in at the start of their newscast with him, and then later on broke in to see him arrested. That's just unbelievable that this guy can even walk the streets. Your thoughts?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've made a bunch of comments recently about that. You know, because this freedom of speech, that's a wonderful thing, and you know, it's a very important right that we have. But when someone is very obviously not only stalking children, but giving other people information on how to stalk children, knowing that he's giving other pedophiles and sexual predators this information, you know, teaching them how to go out and find kids, you know, this goes beyond freedom of speech, and not everything is free speech. You know, there are things that are, you know, you can't say in certain places, and stalking children, that's separate from freedom of speech, of course, but, you know, this issue about being able to say whatever he wants on his web blog when he had it, and giving out information about these kids and posting children's pictures. And now to be out there stalking little, we're talking about, I think the kids go up to 3 years old in the place that he was at recently.
Yeah.
You know, if I had a little 3-year old in a little, you know, school, and I found a man standing outside taking photos of her or him, I would take the man's camera out of his hands and throw it on the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is such an invasion of privacy. And, you know, because you're talking about children. And so I'm so glad that these law enforcement people are not sitting back and that they're going forward and stopping him from what he's doing, because he is crossing a line, in my opinion. And I do believe that any you know, reputable judge will find this guy guilty of some crime. I think stalking for one, endangering, you know, and there's got to be other things involved with the web blog that he had.
Yeah, absolutely. And seeing that greaseball getting arrested on KTLA last night was fantastic, and it's about time, and we'll talk more about him later. Stephanie Good, author of A Rush to Injustice, Exposed, Aruba, you name it.
She Law does, School 101.
Law School 101, you name it. She's an attorney, very busy, and always a great guest to have on the program. Thanks, Steph.
Thank you, Dana.
We'll talk again real soon.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's it. That's the Dana Pretzer Show tonight on Scared Monkeys Radio. Don't forget, our webpage domain has changed. It's now scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's scaredmonkeysradio.com. Of course, you can pick us up on satellite W3957 at kickradio.com and on XS Communications Channel 7. Check into the webpage in about an hour. The podcast will be available. There you can hear that. You can listen to my show live when it is on. My daily commentary and everything else. Of course, if you have comments about my program, you can email me at dana@scaredmonkeys.com. That's dana@scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks to all my guests this evening. Thank you. Good night.